medicine. Somebody mixed my medicine.
Hello, my friends. It's November 18th, 2022. My name is Chris, and you are tuned into Canadian Patriot Radio. Welcome, my friends. We got a lot to go through today. We got the ongoing Emergencies Act Commission. We got the CSIS director saying that there was no, was never a national, the convoy protest was never a national security threat. We've got some interesting numbers coming out of the U.S. You guys will like this. The amount of people that have not actually taken the vaccine is way higher than we had initially thought in the U.S. We're going to cover that. We have some of our local freedom fighter news. We've got some of our regulars, our regular contributors have unfortunately gotten ticketed in court over the mandate charges. And a whole bunch of other stuff. Sorry, I'm a little bit distracted here this morning. I'm trying to organize this morning. Tonight, I'm trying to organize all my stuff as I'm opening the show. Okay, what did we want to start with? What I wanted to do first, my friends, was I wanted to give you a quick update on what's going on in Arizona. Full-on election fraud, you guys are fully aware of it. But there's a little bit of information I want to share that came to us by way of the War Room, O'Bannon's podcast. And I'm going to play a clip of this for you because it has Carrie Lake and some other candidates that were screwed out of their positions, and they're testifying of exactly what happened.
Hi, my name is Jeff Zink. I'm also Maricopa County resident. I'm also a congressional candidate for District 3 against Ruben Gallego that I ran. One of the things that I am trying to bring brought to attention is that we have media that's being excluded here. The America Voice and Gateway Pundit has not been allowed to be in here. Why? That's a great question for y'all to answer. The other is that I also worked the Arizona audit in 2020. The Arizona primary audit that a lot of people don't know. I've also worked 9 states in this country. The fraud that has been taking place is rampant, but this county alone, y'all in Georgia are fighting tooth and nail to be who's more corrupt. This is something that I feel like that we need to actually take control of. In my race alone, an algorithm took place, which shows that at no time did I ever gain any ground whatsoever. Yet, in all of the exit polls and all the people that have been polled, 56% of the people exiting out of Maricopa County was Republicans on Election Day. Yet, that does not reflect in any shape or form in my election. In fact, it is a linear line that is actually perpendicular to Ruben Gallego's. This is a farce. This election, absolutely, along with the 2020, is no longer certifiable. This needs to be redone. We need ballots that are paper. It needs to be counted in one day. If Florida can count, which is twice our size, the amount with a hurricane, then we should be able to do it in one day as well. And the fact that we don't is a disgrace to not only the Arizonans that you're trying to represent, but what I'm also trying to represent.
Mr. Zink, your time is up. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Jonah Landry. I'm 20 years old, and this past midterm has will be the first time I voted in a second major election. It is an honor to be able to take part in such an integral part of our country, but nothing is more diminishing than feeling like your voice is not heard. And that's what I and many others feel right now. I am not here to attack anyone, but I am here to simply give a perspective that many of my peers and I feel. Many of you are probably here going to get complaints about insecurities with machines, ballot stuffing, week-long counting, and some of the members even of this board being in a coalition that was to prevent MAGA candidates. And though some of these arguments I agree with having some factor in the result of the elections, that is not what I'm here to talk about today. Today I'm here to talk about something that can't be chalked up to conspiracy theory rhetoric, but is a factual event that cannot be denied. Today I'm here to talk about the errors that occurred in 20 to 30% of our voting machines. The delays that resulted from these errors extended lines around 60 to 90 minutes long. Now normally, I would be upset about this, but wouldn't say it's election-changing issues if it were not for two factors. First is how close this election is. Our governor is being decided by a difference of 17,000 votes, and our attorney general by less than 1,000. The second factor is that a request to extend the poll was submitted, just like Pennsylvania when they had delays, but for some reason it was shot down. That is willful neglect. A lot of people here went to vote early because they had no time to vote after work. But delays did not allow them to vote in general without being late. When election day in-person votes average around 16% Democrats and these machine errors affected mainly red areas, we would have seen different results. I request that December 6th, Maricopa County holds a runoff election without these machines that caused the problems in the first place. Thank you.
Thank you again. Please, no outbursts.
Hey, Arizona, Carrie Lake here. I wanted to reach out to you to let you know that I am still in this fight with you. For 2 years, I've been sounding the alarm about our broken election system here in Arizona, and this past week has confirmed everything we've been saying. When we called for Katie Hobbs to recuse herself over a year ago, they ridiculed us. It turns out we were right. The fox was guarding the hen house, and because of that, voters have been disenfranchised. When we raised concerns and I filed a lawsuit months ago to get rid of the electronic voting machines, they said we were crazy. Well, it turns out we were right. On election day, nearly half of all polling locations had problems with tabulating machines and printers. Malfunctioning tabulation machines forced voters to wait in line for hours to exercise their sacred right to vote. I talked to voters who waited in line for hours. One man told me he went to a location and there was a 3-hour line because the tabulators weren't working. He drove 15 miles to another location and the printers weren't working. He drove another 15 miles and was finally able to cast his vote, but he's not sure it counted. Our election officials failed us miserably. What happened to Arizonans on election day is unforgivable. Tens of thousands of Maricopa County voters were disenfranchised. Now, I am busy here collecting evidence and data. Rest assured, I have assembled the best and brightest legal team, and we are exploring every avenue to correct the many wrongs that have been done this past week. I'm doing everything in my power to right these wrongs. My resolve to fight for you is higher than ever. This movement started in Arizona, and it quickly expanded to all 50 states. It's a movement of mama bears and papa bears and students and Arizonans who love this country, who want secure borders, who want schools that prepare their children for the real opportunities that are out there. It's a movement of Arizonans who want safe streets once again and want the drug crisis to come to an end. It's a movement of Arizonans who want prosperity and the pursuit of happiness. That movement is stronger than it ever has been. And I can promise you one thing. This fight to save our republic has just begun. I love you, Arizona, and I love you, America.
And Canada loves Carrie Lake. She's awesome. You knew damn well they were going to screw her. There was no way they could have a MAGA candidate of her caliber actually win Arizona. Katie Hobbs is too embedded. in the deep state to let her lose. I think they overplayed their hand here. It'll be interesting to see what she's collected for data. Actually, we'll return to this topic right after the intro. Steve O'Bannon actually interviews one of Carrie Lake's top officials, and it's a great interview. You got to hear what she has to say. And then we will kind of segue into the fact that you've got China interfering in Canadian elections. Now it's kind of known. We're going to talk about that. So it's not just an American problem. We kind of knew this in the 2019 election that odds are this wasn't a free and fair election. So this is a cross-border problem, and that's why I'm focusing on Arizona. I knew, you and I both knew that Arizona, they were going to screw Carrie Lake out of her actual governorship, and they did. So that's why I'm focused on it, because it was so predictable. There was just no way that we couldn't cover it. Anyway, let's get the show started, my friends. We'll be right back. Welcome, friends, to Canadian Patriot Radio, where conspiracy is not theory and political corruption finds the spotlight. CPR, we are committed to upholding Canadians' God-given rights to life, liberty, and freedom with all thy sons. Command. Back, my friends. Let's stay on point with Arizona and listen to this interview so that you guys can kind of hear how they're working to combat this out of control election fraud at this point.
And now Caroline Wren, a senior advisor to Carrie Lake. Caroline, just tell us, where exactly do we stand in this? You know, you guys went dark and ship for a couple of days internally, I think, to work these things through. You know, we're coming up on Friday. They haven't finished counting. You were still getting drops, right? We're getting drops from Apache, Cochise. You know, there was more ballots from Maricopa County this morning. You know, we were told the other day that, you know, Maricopa County's done, but there's all of a sudden more in Maricopa County. Surprise, surprise, couple of thousand. So I don't think the certification process hasn't, I think, officially started, because they're still putting in ballots. Where are we in the process, and where are we in Carrie Lake's fight?
Well, it's been, I guess, what is it, 8 days since Election Day, and they're not done counting. I mean, this doesn't happen in other states. This is unbelievable. We're watching Maricopa just keeps finding more ballots, and the lack of communication between Maricopa County and the different campaigns and legal teams is really stunning. They don't give us any straight information, any straight answers. We ask for it politely. We tried to demand it, and it's just nothing. We just are basically at the mercy of what everyone else sees, where they just publicly say, okay, here's another drop. Good luck. Figure out where it's from. And then there's counties all over that we don't have still, you know, all the votes in. You know, Abe's in a really, really tight race. And every time you see Abe just gained 222 votes, but then Apache County drops 224 votes for Chris Mays. And it's just, It's nobody has faith in this. This is a completely broken system. And so we're working hard. We went a little dark just trying to figure out what to do. It's hard to keep up with the amount of information that is one public coming out publicly, but also just thousands of people who are reaching out to say that they or a loved one or a friend was disenfranchised on election day. And preparing a legal team to even go through that amount of data is really quite difficult. I mean, that is just so much. And then the other part is a big place where that data lives is in the Secretary of State's office. This is the same Secretary of State that's our opponent who wouldn't recuse herself. This is the same Secretary of State who is in charge of certifying this election. This is the same Secretary of State who botched this entire election that she was supposed to oversee.
Why haven't you gone in? If Maricopa County is not giving you access, and there's some pretty basic things they have to give, like the login book versus the number of votes. I mean, there's certain ways the system's supposed to have to check. The manuals, the manual is about that thick. And of course, there were so many conflicting and confusing orders given on Tuesday that conflict with the document that's that big. Remember, this document just didn't drop from heaven. This document was highly negotiated and processed oriented. I think Haiti Hobbs's name's on it's promulgated under the signature of the Secretary of State and the Attorney General and the Governor. This was all supposed to take care of the problems of 2020. So this is not something that they just kind of thought up on the spot. Yet there's so many moving pieces that weren't done according to the manual. If you're not getting the information, why have you not gone into court and get an injunction and have a judge or ask for the court to start to supervise this? If it's as much a fiasco on the inside from you guys as it appears to the voting public and to the media that is covering this closely, and you can just see it, Maricopa, don't take my word for it. Just listen to the hours of testimony by voters and candidates at the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors meeting. Why are you not in court asking for a TRO, an injunction, or at least for some sort of court supervision of this fiasco that obviously Katie Hobbs and Bill Gates can't manage and can't oversee, ma'am?
To answer the first part of your question regarding the manual since 2020 and Katie Hobbs, well, reminder, her office has been closed since 2020. So I don't think anyone within Katie Hobbs' office or anyone even knows what's in this manual, quite frankly, because they're certainly not following it. And this was truly one of the worst run elections maybe in the history of time. So it's that part. The second part is I can't go too much even to the legal strategy, but there are a couple of things I can go into. And there's been a lot of back and forth between our attorneys and the Maricopa County attorneys. And I do think that we need to be more public about what those things are. We've been trying to be very careful and I don't want to say play by the rules because the Democrats certainly don't, but trying to follow this process along. But one of the letters that our attorney sent yesterday is something really simple that we'd like to know. Why is it that we start early voting on October 12th? And why did 0% of the voting centers encounter tabulation problems during early voting when we know the Democrats were all heavily voting? And why did that number then jump up to 48% of voting centers encounter tabulation problems on election day when voters voted for Carrie Lake 3-1. Basic things like that are being put in writing. We're sending them to Maricopa County. Shocker, they're not answering them. But these are things that if, you know, certain things end up going to litigation, I think there's a lot of people who would like to know this because I would like to know. I think that is absolutely outrageous. And it's either total incompetence or it's malice. And I think that's what we're going to try to find out.
Carrie Lake is a fighter. Her whole campaign is a fighter's campaign. I take it you guys are doing the work, you're getting the data, you just don't want to be flailing around. But I would assume that given what you're telling me, that the people, her supporters and her opponents are going to see something a little more aggressive shortly.
I guess, I mean, we both are also, the courts aren't on our side. Like, reminder, Carrie Lake sued to get rid of these tabulation machines 6 months ago, and the court told her she didn't have standing. Like, if Carrie Lake didn't have standing, I mean, who does? And sure enough, like they all said that we're crazy and we're conspiracy theorists and the judge threw it out. Kelly Ward was yelling at everyone for months about tonering and they called her a crazy conspiracy theorist. And here we are, 48% of the tabulation centers went down on election day due to tonering and other printer malfunction issues. This is something that we sued about 6 months ago, something we yelled at everyone about. So, you know, we can take these things to court, but like at some point we're just,
Does the campaign think that this election's certifiable, yes or no?
I don't want to answer that question and jump out against the litigation yet, but I can tell you that Carrie Lake is certainly a fighter, and I just don't want to answer that yet, but I think that the public will have an answer to that very, very soon as to whether we do or not.
Caroline, how do people follow you? People are on tenterhooks about this, not just the Carrie Lake supporters, sure, but the media from around the world, the opposition, the Carrie Lake haters, the Carrie Lake supporters, the world at large. How do they follow you?
Well, I think one thing, if you have any friends or family or one of the thousands of people in Maricopa County that experience serious issues on election day, encourage people to go to saveaznow.com. And that's where you can officially put in your claim. And we have attorneys that are going to be looking into that. And then separately, follow at Carrie Lake on Twitter, Getter, other places. And it's at Caroline Wren.
So there you go, my friends. There's an update of the election fraud that is the center of our focus, which is Arizona. So it sounds like the Carrie Lake team has a uphill battle, of course. But one thing that is promising is the numbers that are coming out of Arizona are like impossible. They've got that going against them. From what I'm understanding, there was like a 17% exit poll Democrat turnout. 17%, and Katie Hobbs is beating Carrie Lake when the voters were basically 3-1 Republican. How does that add up? How does that stack up? That it just doesn't. It doesn't. It doesn't compute. So there's problems there, right? And the nice thing about this, as opposed to 2020, is this is centralized. There's one. It's one basically county where all your issues are. Most of your problems are in Maricopa. So this is going to be hard for them to try and sweep under the rug. Like the fact that there's no coverage whatsoever, like to even find this information is very difficult. That's the only way they're going to try and make this disappear. They're just going to try and keep it out of people's minds, and they're just going to try and march forward like they did with Joe Biden getting 81 million ballots, not votes. We've learned that now too, my friends, that he got 81 million ballots, not votes. Big difference. Okay, let's shift our focus to what's going on here in Canada. And this is in regards to election fraud or interference, but fraud all the same. Now, this one comes to us by way of Global News, and the title reads, RCMP aware of foreign interference, but mum on if they're probing China allegations. This is by Sean Boyton, and it was written today, November 18th, 2022. The RCMP says it is aware of interference by foreign actors in Canada and is working to combat it, but will not confirm if it is investigating allegations that China attempted to interfere in the 2019 federal election. The RCMP, I'm just stepping out for a minute, the RCMP, how they just, this institution, this Canadian institution, the RCMP, is eliminating itself. Let's just put it that way. By not investigating specific things and then charging forward on other things, like confiscating weapons during a flood in High River, and other issues, other things I could point out, this police force is effectively eliminating itself. The Canadian people are starting to see that the RCMP is a corrupt institution, and we are not wanting it anymore. Let's carry on. The statement comes on the heels of Global News reporting last week that Canadian intelligence officials have warned Prime Minister Justin Trudeau that China has allegedly been targeting Canada with a vast campaign of foreign interference, including funding a clandestine network of at least 11 federal candidates in the 2019 campaign. The RCMP is aware of foreign actor interference activity in Canada from foreign state actors. Various methods and techniques are in place to combat foreign actor interference within the RCMP's mandate, an RCMP spokesperson said in a statement to Global News on Friday. For operational reasons, we cannot speak at length about this. However, should there be any criminal or illegal activity occurring within Canada that is found to be backed by a foreign state, it is within the RCMP's mandate to investigate this activity. Yeah, investigate and then do nothing about it. Global News reported on Wednesday that a prominent businessman in Toronto's Chinese community is the subject of two separate investigations involving foreign interference, both related to a series of briefings and memos that Canadian security officials allegedly gave to Trudeau beginning in January. The Canadian Security Intelligence Service, or CSIS, has investigated Wei Changyi for his alleged role in a covert scheme that facilitated large fund transfers meant to advance Beijing's interests in Canada's 2019 federal election, sources said. According to RCMP sources, national security investigators are also probing Wei for possible links to several properties in Toronto and Vancouver, allegedly used as so-called Chinese government police stations, which are believed to secretly host agents from China's Ministry of Public Security. The RCMP has confirmed it is investigating those so-called police stations in Toronto and Vancouver, which followed media reporting into their alleged activities. But the force's comments on being aware of foreign interference come amid a week of questions in the House of Commons about what actions the government may have taken in response to the intelligence briefing reported on by Global News. Liberal MP Pam Damoff, who is Parliamentary Secretary to the Minister of Public Safety, has responded to those questions from Conservatives over recent days. On Tuesday, she responded to a question from Conservative MP Michael Chong asking about the allegations of Chinese election interference by saying that the RCMP and our intelligence agencies are investigating and Canadians expect us to do the work that is required to take the action and take the action, which is what we are doing. Oh, yeah. We've seen the Liberals take action on a multitude of subjects, haven't we, my friends? Absolutely no action. No action whatsoever. Unless they're spending your money or laundering it through Ukraine. Damoff's chief of staff, Sarah Thomas, clarified to Global News later that day that the MP is referring to ongoing efforts by the RCMP, CSIS, and other agencies, what other agencies, to investigate attempted foreign interference in Canada's institutions, rather than the specific 2019 election allegations. The RCMP have confirmed that they are investigating Chinese police stations recently made arrests in a case involving an alleged spy who worked at Hydro-Québec and regularly conducted investigations into those who would threaten Canada's democracy, Thomas said. During question period on Friday, Damoff expressed frustration about the number of questions the Conservatives were devoting to the issue of China's alleged interference. Well, why? Why are you frustrated about that? They have every right. Because if that election isn't legit, that means you're an illegitimate government. But here at Canadian Patriot Radio, we all know that the Liberals haven't been legitimate since what? December 17th, 2014, since they voted to reintegrate ISIS fighters into Canada, which is aiding and abetting an enemy of Canada, which is what, my friends? That is high treason. Still punishable by death in Canada, by the way. I'm disappointed that the opposition for 5 days now have continued to amplify the foreign interference messaging in this house, she said in response to questions. We should be standing together to stand up to this attack on our democracy. No. That's not how this works. We're not going to cross the aisle and stand up with the party that probably benefited from election interference from China. That's not how this works. So sit the fuck down if you don't got something intelligent to say, just like the rest of your fascists that masquerade as liberal counterparts. What a bunch of dummies. You know, every time I watch the House of Commons, and this is exactly what it's intended to do. You see these idiots stand up and give this word salad, mumbo jumbo crap responses that don't answer anything at all. And in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, this is what we've got to offer in Canada. These mumbling fucking morons is the best and brightest that we've got in Canada. No, they're not. These are selected idiots. All designed to demoralize the Canadian public. To watch these morons standing up and trying to tell us what is and what isn't is a direct demoralization campaign against every smart, independently thinking Canadian. That's why they do that. That's why they've got these retards telling you what to do or telling you how to live as a Canadian. In a statement sent to Global News, Damoff's office reiterated that she had pushed back on opposition questions and accused Conservatives of repeatedly amplifying foreign interference messaging in the House. An independent panel of intelligence experts confirmed that the 2019 and 2021 elections were not compromised by foreign actors, the statement added. An independent panel of intelligence experts? Who? Who are these people? This is third party. Like, this is what we got to start picking apart in the media. That right there, my friends, is third-party information, which is better than is not better than gossip. That's gossip. Someone said that this person knows, or this person. This is what the American media does with Trump. oh, an aide to Trump's freaking so-called aide or friend of a person knew that Trump was flipping out in the White House the other day. That's how stupid those statements are. That's what that is. That's gossip. It's bullshit. Don't listen. As soon as you see something like that, you just call bullshit right there. RCMP and intelligence agencies are taking concrete action to combat all incidences of foreign interference to ensure the integrity of Canadian democracy and protect the safety of all Canadians. Uh-huh. Intelligence agencies. What other intelligence agencies? We've got CSIS. What else? What are the other intelligence agencies? Maybe you guys know. If you do know, then reach out to me and tell me what they are. Conservative questions have repeatedly asked whether the intelligence briefings were shared with election officials and for the government to name any of the 11 election candidates allegedly to have received funding. During a press conference earlier this week announcing changes against the alleged Chinese spy network spy working for Hydro-Québec, Inspector David Boydon of the RCMP's Integrated National Security Enforcement Team called the foreign actor interference a topic and sphere of police operations that's recently been gaining traction. We are more and more active in that sphere because we believe it's a subject that directly impacts national security, said. You don't say. You've got the Chinese Communist Party directly funding candidates that they are running in Canadian elections, and you believe it impacts national security? Well, thank you, Captain Obvious. Thank you so much for that statement, that brilliant statement that just enlightened everybody listening to this podcast, because before that, we had no idea. Members of Parliament agreed on Monday to probe the allegations that China covertly funded some of Canada's 2019 election candidates. The motion called on the Procedure and House Affairs Committee to extend its ongoing study of foreign election interference by 4 meetings. Oh, if we get 4 more meetings, that's just going to uncover so much more. Oh, Jesus. Which Cooper said would allow it to investigate the allegations in the Global News report. How is the government receiving information from fucking Global News? How did nobody in the government was briefed on this? Not a single person in the Liberal cabinet was briefed on the fact that the Chinese Communist Party had, 11 to 15 candidates, funded candidates by the party, running in Canadian elections, and not one fucking person in the Liberal cabinet knew that? Or am I supposed to believe stupid crap like that? And sorry, I'm being rather foul tonight, but this is so fucking stupid that I can't believe that people are soaking this up at this point. They knew before this even happened. There's probably Chinese Communist Party money funding them to shut their mouths about it. If you know about it, shut up and we'll line your pockets. Off the books. Every single sitting member of Parliament's bank transactions, bank records, funding for their campaigns, all of it should be public. All of it. Any income at any way. If they set up a lemonade stand and are selling lemonade for 50 cents a cup, the Canadian people have a right to fucking know that. Every single cent that these members of Parliament receive should be public information. That is transparency. That's what the Liberals ran on. The most transparent government that this country's ever seen. That's what they told us the first time that they ran. That they were going to be so transparent. Look at this crap. Every time you turn around, every single week, you have to deal with more Liberal corruption out in the frickin' middle of the road. Like, you can't even avoid it. You have to see it every week. And it just keeps on going forward. But like I said, they haven't been a legitimate government since what? 2017 or 2014, however. No, 17. 17. It's just been a farce since then. Anyway, let's switch gears here and let's try to get me back so I'm not F-bombing every second word here. Okay, let's switch over to COVID here. There's some really cool numbers coming out of the U.S., 74.2 million people in the U.S. have not had a single dose of COVID-19. So that's more than what we had initially thought. I think the initial numbers were 30 million was what they were saying. But it's actually more than that. And so this is an expose article, and it's got a read-along thing. So let's let it read to us, and we'll talk about it afterwards like we always do.
74.2 million people in the USA have not had a single dose of a COVID-19 vaccine, and another 157 million have refused a second or third dose, according to CDC. The American people have seen right through President Biden's propaganda and lies on the effectiveness of the COVID-19 injections because, according to CDC data, 70% of the entire population of the USA have not had either a first, second, or third dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. President Joe Biden has lied to the American people and is still lying to the American people. In July 2021, Biden falsely stated that you're not going to get COVID if you have these vaccinations, and if you're vaccinated, you're not going to be hospitalized, you're not going to be in the ICU unit, and you're not going to die. Then in December 2021, Biden falsely claimed this is a pandemic of the unvaccinated. The unvaccinated. Not the vaccinated, the unvaccinated. That's the problem. Everybody talks about freedom and not to have a shot or have a test. Well, guess what? How about patriotism? How about making sure that you're vaccinated, so you do not spread the disease to anyone else? There is plenty of evidence out there that proves the above statements made by President Biden are outright lies, see here, but the most hilarious evidence of all must be the recent outbreak that occurred due to journalists and government leaders attending the Gridiron Dinner at the beginning of April 2022. An annual event in Washington, D.C., all guests at the event were required to show proof of vaccination. A week later, at least 72 of the 630 fully vaccinated/boosted guests tested positive for COVID-19. But it would appear the majority of the American people can already see through President Biden's lies without us needing to put the record straight. Because according to data published by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control, 74.2 million Americans are still completely unvaccinated, and a further 157 million Americans have refused a second or third dose of the COVID-19 injection. Meaning 50% of the entire country has potentially become wise to the propaganda and lies spouted by the American government, Dr. Anthony Fauci, and the mainstream media over the past 2 years. The Centers for Disease Control CDC provides the following data on COVID-19 vaccinations in the United States. Data for dose 1, source date for dose 2, source data for dose 3, source. We've created the following chart based on the figures provided by the CDC above, showing the total vaccination uptake versus the total vaccination refusal in the USA per dose. As we can see from the above, according to the CDC, 257 million people have had a single dose, 219.7 million people have had a second dose, and 100.7 million people have had a third dose as of May 2, 2022. This means, on top of the 74.2 million unvaccinated, a further 38 million people who had the first dose refused the second dose, and a further 119 million people who had the second dose refused the third dose. This equates to 70% of the entire population of the USA who have not had either a first, second, or third dose of a COVID-19 injection. However, the above chart includes children under the age of 5 who are not eligible for COVID-19 vaccination. So we've created the following chart based on the figures provided by the CDC above, showing the total vaccination uptake versus the total vaccination refusal in the USA per dose among those who are eligible for vaccination, on top of the 54.7 million people eligible for COVID-19 vaccination who have chosen to remain unvaccinated, a further 37.9 million people who had the first dose refused the second dose, and a further 90.2 million people who had the second dose refused the third dose. This brings the possible number of people who have now woken up to the lies and propaganda spouted by the government and mainstream media over the past 2 years to 182.8 million, 55% of the entire population of the USA. Approximately 183 million people in the USA are now refusing to partake in the largest real-world experiment ever conducted, even though their elected president told them it was their patriotic duty to get vaccinated because he falsely claimed the vaccinated do not spread COVID-19. President Biden is probably breathing a sigh of relief that so many people have chosen to ignore his lies. Because a study of official data published by the Government of Canada has found triple vaccinated individuals are now 4 times more likely to be infected with COVID-19, 2 times more likely to be hospitalized with COVID-19, and 2 times more likely to die of COVID-19 than unvaccinated individuals. One reason why this could be occurring is that the COVID-19 injections are causing vaccine-associated enhanced disease and antibody-dependent enhancement. But this would not explain the increased risk of infection. But there's another condition that would explain the increased risk of infection as well as the increased risk of hospitalization and death. And that condition is acquired immune deficiency syndrome.
AIDS. AIDS, my friends. They gave everybody AIDS. They've even admitted that they had to use a small portion of HIV to make the vaccine work. Oh, boy. If this world ever writes itself, there has to be public hearings. It would have to be Nuremberg 2.0. And then there has to be public executions. The entire world has to see people hang for this. Because this is democide. There's no other way to describe it. Like, this is genocide / democide. It was your governments that pushed this crap on you all the way down to the provincial and municipal level. You had people pushing this. And every single one of those people that pushed it need to be held accountable to the harshest degree. Okay, my friends, we are going to now look at the emergency commission, because CSIS director confesses that convoy protests was never a national security threat. Now, this is brought to us by Front Page News, and it's a wonderful collaboration of what's being said and what's being revealed. for those of you that aren't watching the emergency commission, I know it's torturous. We're getting into some of the good nitty-gritty now. But it's taken a while. Some of the big players that need to testify are revealing a lot of interesting stuff. So let's turn it over to Front Page News so you guys can hear this clip.
The Public Order Emergency Commission is now in its public hearing stage. In order to collect information on the Trudeau Liberal government's invocation of the Emergencies Act earlier in February this year. According to a summary of the interview with the commission, the director of the Canadian Security Intelligence Service, David Vignolt, will testify at the Emergencies Act inquiry in the upcoming weeks that his agency did not view the convoy protests of last winter as a national security threat under the legislation that establishes the agency's mandate. Although Vignolt has not yet provided testimony in front of the panel, a witness was given a summary of his interview on November 14. According to the interview summary provided by Vignolt, at no time did the service determine that the protests in Ottawa or elsewhere, the so-called Freedom Convoy and associated protests and blockades in January to February this year constituted a threat to the security of Canada as defined by Section 2 of the CSIS Act, and that the CSIS cannot investigate activity constituting lawful protest. Vignolt said that the definition of a danger to national security might be formed based on other unnamed factors, while at the same time suggesting that the demonstrations by the convoy against COVID-19 limits did not exceed the level set by CSIS. According to the summary, a determination that something does not constitute a threat to national security under Section 2 of the Act does not preclude a determination that something does constitute a threat to national security under a broader definition or from the perspective of the general public. In the meantime, even though the documents containing Vignolt's interview summary have not yet been made accessible to the general public, screenshots were taken from the webcast that the commission was doing. According to the screenshots, Vignolt first became aware that the Emergency Preparedness Act makes a reference to Section 2 of the CSIS Act around the time that the Trudeau Liberal government began to give the idea of declaring a state of emergency a more serious consideration between February 10 and 13. And based on this, he had instructed his agency to carry out a threat assessment of the dangers that are involved with activating the Emergency Act. The summary of the interview reveals that Vignolt felt obligated to clearly convey the position of the service that the Freedom Convoy did not exist as a threat to the security of Canada as defined by the legal mandate of the service. At the same time, the interview summary also reveals that according to the analysis conducted by CSIS, the invocation of the Emergencies Act would ignite anti-government sentiments. Meanwhile, during his testimony before the commission on Monday, former Deputy Minister of Public Safety Rob Stewart was given a summary of Vignolt's interview. From the winter of 2015 to 2016, Stewart served as the Deputy Minister of International Trade. Prior to this appointment, he was in charge of CSIS as part of his public safety portfolio. At the inquiry, Brendan Miller, a lawyer for Freedom Convoy who was representing some of the convoy organizers, asked Stewart whether there had been any intelligence agency that had provided information to the government that would meet the definition of threat as considered by CSIS. Stewart responded that other than the CSIS, nobody else who was given counsel to the table was analyzing such danger. He stated that the cabinet is making such a judgment, and their interpretation of a law is what rules. And their conclusion was obvious that the threshold had been reached. Stewart was further asked if he personally thought the events to be a danger to national security, and in what looks like an unconvinced answer and skillfully navigating the question, he replied that they were deemed to be and judged to be a danger to national security. Tom Curry, the lawyer for Peter Slowly, the former chief of police in Ottawa, further asked Stewart whether the Liberal government's allegations of the convoy being a national threat was also his personal view. Stewart replied that he was quite anxious about the likelihood of physical and severe violence. So much for all revelations. Since the beginning of the Emergency Act hearing, there has not been any information that suggests an intelligence or police agency evaluated the truckers' demonstrations as posing a danger to Canada's national security so far. Even though at one point the intelligence unit of the Ontario Provincial Police estimated that there could be a potential threat to national security. The head of the unit, Superintendent Pat Morris, has stated last month that he was not comfortable with that wording, given the position of the Canadian Security Intelligence Service and the Integrated National Security Enforcement Team of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. And of course, it appears we got yet another nail in the coffin of the narcissistic invocation of the Emergency Act by Justin Trudeau and his minions, because at every point in the public hearings, it turns out that it was only under the Trudeau Liberals' selfish political narrative that the Freedom Convoy threatened Canada's national security.
So yet again, through admissions in the Emergencies Commission, we are finding out that the whole rhetoric, this whole a national security threat came from the PMO's office. That this is all politicized. There was no threats. There was no them seizing money. There was no foreign money coming into Canada. It was all local. They seized bank accounts. They basically made it impossible for people that donated to the convoy to even get groceries. So, all in all, my thoughts on this commission, it's not surprising to any of us that are really paying attention. But what this is doing is I'm hoping it's awakening a whole nother slew of Canadians to just the level of corruption and how far this government has gone to maintain control. Like, this is a power-hungry fascist government. And they will do whatever it takes to stomp out any opposition, including publicly trample them with horses. So it'll be interesting to see when Trudeau himself is in the hot seat and Chrystia Freeland. I know everybody will be watching those. Even Medicino, smart guy, has to sit in front of this commission, and that's going to be good. That'll be good watching right there, my friend. So I recommend that you you tune in when it comes to that. So what am I going to do next here, my friends? I'm going to focus on the fact that those of us that had COVID charges, myself included, are losing in court. But I'm not discouraged about that. I just think that the whole mandate, all of it, the emergency measures, all of it was based on false information. So it's just a matter of time before that information becomes public. We're well aware of it. We even know that masks don't work. Putting a mask on to stop a virus is like putting up a chain link fence to stop mosquitoes. That's basically coming from scientists and doctors that tell you that. So all of the measures that were taken, like the six feet apart, wearing masks in public, masks outdoors, doesn't make any sense whatsoever. We all know that this isn't scientific, that this is not real science. This is pseudoscience. We know that. But it's just a matter of time. So even if you have been convicted, like myself included, there will be a case that breaks through and proves that the science was faulty. And when that happens, I think what people that have been convicted or have lost their cases in court, that's when you turn around and sue. And I think you do it as a class action. So don't be discouraged at this point. If you have been convicted, I guess pay your fines for now. Keep records of absolutely everything. And just wait, because there are constitutional challenges. There's the big swingers are still very much fighting the good fight. And I think they're going to break through on quite a few levels, right? But I just want to cover what happened out east. I had this sent to me from Graham. Thanks for sharing this with me, Graham. Chef probably won't like me reading this, but don't worry, Chef. This is we all learn together. This is how we do it. So this comes to us by way of today's Northumberland. And the title reads, Exclusive Anti-COVID Protester Given Hefty Fine in Coburg Court. When was this written? It does not tell me. Okay, a Coburg man was given a hefty fine after being found guilty under the Emergency Management and Civil Protection Act in an Ontario Court of Justice on Wednesday, November 16th, 2022 in Coburg. Chef was the defendant who represented himself during the trial. Paul Murray was the counsel for the Crown, and Justice of the Peace Jay LeBlanc presided over the hearing. Justice of the Peace. Clausen had pled not guilty to a single count under the Emergency Management and Civil Protection Act when his trial began on September 29th, 2022, which is Chef. Sorry about that, Chef. During the trial that took less than a few hours to complete, Coburg Police Constable Daniel McKean said several police officers in attendance at a weekly protest were in attendance at a weekly protest in front of Victoria Hall on April 10th, 2021. At the time, there was a stay-home order in place and outdoor gatherings were limited to 5 people at a time. Masks or facial coverings were required when social distancing of 6 feet or more could not be accommodated. McKean testified at 12:25 p.m. There were approximately 20 people carrying anti-COVID signs and protesting outside Victoria Hall. At the time, it was the police policy of Coburg Police Services to educate first, and failing that, to enforce the law. Several people, including Chef Todd and Graham, were recognized by police from previous anti-COVID protests in front of Victoria Hall. On April 10th, 2021, Chef interacting with the majority of the protesters and at no time wearing a mask or social distancing. Oh, you criminal, Chef. Oh, the humanity. Another officer asked the crowd to disperse, but neither Chef nor other individuals did. McKean testifies that at the time, she determined that Chef would not be abiding by the regulations and was issued a ticket, which he refused to accept. When Chef took the witness stand, he said, I protested. That was it. I stood on the street from 12 to 3 p.m. on Saturday with other people of the same mind as me. I did not vandalize or obstruct traffic. All I did was protest. Under cross-examination, Chef said that he knew gatherings of 5 or more people outdoors was not permitted, and that Chef knew he was required by law to wear a mask or, failing that, to social distance. Chef did not bring a constitutional challenge or challenge the legislation. In his submissions, Murray stated, there is not a scintilla of defense in relation to this matter, and he should be found guilty. In his submission, Chef repeated that he didn't do anything wrong. I just stand by my conviction. All I did was protest. There is nothing illegal about it. That's it. LeBlanc, in his decision, said on March 17th, the provincial government declared an emergency throughout the province in response to the pandemic. Because of that, the Emergency Management and Civil Protection Act was activated. Under the Act, it states the purpose of making orders is to protect health, safety, and welfare of the Canadian people of Ontario in times of declared emergencies in a manner that is subject to the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. That whole statement right there can be scrutinized on so many levels. Even the one before that. The provincial government declared an emergency throughout the province in response to the pandemic because of the Emergency Management and Civil Protection Act was activated. Under the Act, it states the purpose of making orders is to protect the health and safety and welfare of the people of Ontario in times of declared emergencies in a manner that is subject to the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. No, it's stomped all over the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. If this justice actually believes that, he's not very bright. Contrary to Chef's belief, the Emergency Management and Civil Protection Act is law. Is it? Is it? Is it? Based on faulty science, it is law. That statement right there could come back to bite him. Requirements at the time of chefs charged to stay home, to limit outdoor groups to no more than five people, and to require masks or facial covers, or failing that, to maintain social distancing or 6 feet more, were valid law. Based on what? So to state that, he has to have access to the science. The science is faulty. I don't care if you think it's a law. It's based on faulty science or pseudoscience. That's why I'm saying just don't get too discouraged by this, anybody, because even me, I've been convicted too. So I hesitated to say that until I knew how you guys out east were making out. But like I said, in the constitutional challenges that are above some of the superior courts, and in the, you know, will eventually probably end up in the Supreme Court, the science is going to come out that it was faulty or it was based on pseudoscience. There wasn't actual evidence that these measures prevented the spread of COVID. They didn't. So, like, where did they even come up with these numbers? Six people. You had to have under six people, and you had to maintain a distance of 6 feet. Fuckfaces, it's an airborne virus. So explain to me, this justice needs to explain to me how six scientists in the North Pole that were not exposed to any COVID whatsoever all got COVID. Fucking explain that to me. Explain that. How did that happen? What is 6 feet going to do for you? If people on a different fucking continent that have never been exposed to COVID got COVID. And what does that tell you, Justice? What does that tell you? That it's airborne. That it was probably sprayed on the entire globe, if you want my opinion. Let's just carry on with this stupid justice. In his decision, LeBlanc added that Claussen's defense rests on his right to protest. Well, yeah, he's got every single right. Under the charter! Which you said these faulty fucking mandates are based on, which they aren't. To be clear, Chef wasn't prevented from protesting. He could have protested legally by remaining in a group of five or fewer people and by wearing a mask or a facial covering such as a shield, or barring that by staying at least 6 feet from his fellow protesters. He chose not to follow the rules and willingly admitted as much in court. Chef was fined $2,000 and given 180 days to pay. Even in that last statement, I want this justice to explain how six scientists in the North Pole got COVID. Explain that to me. Like I've been saying this whole time, the science is pseudoscience. It's faulty science. It can be picked apart. If you can poke holes through the science, then the laws don't stand up. So just hang on to this stuff, my friends, because odds are we can probably sue over it once it all comes out. But unfortunately, being that we're convicted, we've got to pay it, right? It is what it is. So eventually the truth is going to break free. As much as they want to try and bury it, which is what they're trying to do right now, there's just no way you can pull off a lie like this. Like, you've got people dying. You've got young, healthy people falling over dead from these shots. But, you know, the reason we're not focusing on that is because the media isn't, it's not a big deal. That's normal now. It's SADS, right? Sudden adult death syndrome. That's normal. The coverage or the covering up of this is so pathetic. For those of us that have been, you know, screaming from the rooftops from the very beginning that this is all crap. If you take these shots, you're going to fucking compromise your immune system. Well, imagine that. And not to mention that these safety measures are also based on crap. Like, I don't think that you had a legitimate scientist at all come up with these measures at all. Like, I think you'd probably be more successful with a bunch of 10-year-olds, sit them at a round table and say, okay, how are we going to stop the spread of COVID? And they'd probably come up with more effective measures than the government and Health Canada did. Oh boy. Anyway, my friends, we are at the hour, so we'll shut this one down for now. As always, if you want to reach out to me, you can find me on Facebook. It's Canadian Patriot Radio. Use the message button. It comes directly to me. If you prefer email, it's CanadianPatriotRadio@gmail.com. The Telegram room is t.me/CPR_2. And the website is CanadianPatriotRadio.ca. Thank you so much for tuning in again, my friends. And until next time, in all thy sons, command. Thanks for joining us for another episode of Canadian Patriot Radio. CPR is not filmed before a live studio audience. If you like the show, friends, make sure you give us a thumbs up and share us on all your social media platforms. Until next time, take care.